Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
Tánaiste, you're very welcome to the programme. Thank you for being here this morning.
Good morning, thanks for having me.
We'll start with the reports that many people will have heard since last night about what you reportedly said at your own parliamentary party meeting. The current COVID wave looks to be plateauing at a worryingly high level. So in your assessment, where are we now and where are we heading?
Well, where we are is that the pandemic is not under control, at least not at the moment. We have very high levels of the virus that are circulating in our community. And we can see that we've over 600 people in hospital now, in a system that has 12,000 beds and 900 more than when the pandemic began. That's manageable. If you take trolleys, for example, which are a crude measure of the condition of our hospitals, they're about 50% lower than they would have been this time 2 years ago pre-pandemic, but a very tight and very worrying situation in ICUs. You know, with 130 people in ICU, and when over a third of your ICU beds are used up by people with one illness, there's nothing normal about that, and that's a real pinch point. But at the same time, you know, in the last couple of weeks, the last couple of days, I've kind of detected a certain air of fatalism and a certain fatigue, and that's understandable, and a certain degree of hopelessness. But I actually think that we have some reasons to be hopeful. We should keep the faith. There's a lot of things that are still under our control. And there are a lot of things that could yet go in our favour. So, you know, it does look like case numbers, positivity rate are starting to plateau, but we'd like to see them fall. And particularly going into Christmas, we'd like to see the numbers falling, because there is a concern that in the run-up to Christmas, people will mix more, there'll be intergenerational socialising, all the things that happen at Christmas and are going to happen at Christmas. And we'd like to go into the Christmas period in a better place than we are now, with the number of people in hospital falling and cases falling. And we'll have a better idea in the next week or two as to where we are in regard to that. But I wouldn't like us to rush into any decisions either, because it would be a big mistake, I think, for us to impose a whole set of new restrictions in the next couple of days and only to find out that we turned the corner anyway. And I think that's why, and you know, Ronan Glynn indicated this yesterday, that we probably need another week or so to see where we're going.
Because you said, I know earlier this month, that immunity from vaccines and infection acquired immunity will reach a point over the next couple of weeks when cases will start falling. You were optimistic the other night as well, I think, when you said that you saw signs for optimism. Do you have to be very careful though about saying things like that? Because if you deliver that message, the risk is that behaviour will change and people will say, well, I was going to cancel the Christmas party, but I won't now.
Well, this is always the dilemma when it comes to the messaging that you try to get across to the public. You know, we need people to understand that this is serious, that the virus is circulating widely in our communities, that there are still a lot of people unvaccinated. And of course, even for people who are vaccinated, no vaccines are 100% and the immunity is waning from that. At the same time, I don't want people to lose hope either. You know, we want people to know that the changes that they have made in the past couple of weeks are making a difference. So, you know, there's strong evidence that people have been pulling back on their social contacts, that some events are being cancelled. People need to know that perhaps that's making a difference as well. And also when it comes to the third dose program or the booster program, that is making a difference too. We're now seeing the number of people infected with this virus in among the elderly stable are falling. We see the nursing homes are in a much better place than they would have been, for example, if we'd this level of cases a few months ago or last year. So, you know, there are things going in our favour. And I think it's just trying to balance a genuine concern about where we are in terms of this pandemic with the degree of optimism and faith that actually we can turn this around, that we don't need to be fatalistic. This is still in our hands.
So you don't think that it's inevitable then, given what you've just said, that we will be facing further restrictions before Christmas? Because the Irish Independent is reporting this morning that we could be looking at new limits of people permitted to sit at tables indoors, caps on household visits, a reduction of people at live music venues. And the paper says this morning that they are among the measures being discussed by government. Is that the case?
Well, that's speculation. They haven't been discussed by government, at least not by government ministers, whatever about, at a different level. I think we may need more restrictions heading into the Christmas period, but I don't think we need to be fatalistic about a return to any form of lockdown or even a lockdown light. And I think we should try to avoid that for very good reasons.
So what type of restrictions do you see then?
I don't want to get into that kind of speculation for very good reasons. You know, we've been dealing with this pandemic and talking about it for nearly 2 years now. And when you start to speculate about possible restrictions, you really cause anxiety. And I don't want people, you know, I met somebody on the way in who's got a gig in the Olympia in a week or two. And I don't want to be, you know, throwing out possibilities at this stage. You know, if more restrictions are required, we'll inform people of them at that point in time.
When does that happen though? When do you make that decision? Because we know that there is a lag time. We're at this high plateau now. There's a 2 week lag, isn't there, between the infections that we're seeing today affecting the hospital system. So when do you have to make a decision?
Well, it may be a plateau or it may be a case that we're starting to see a peak. You know, the Deputy CMO yesterday indicated that we probably would need about another week or so to make any firm decisions. I think that's about right. So I think anything that might come out of the NEFA meeting later today won't be in terms of major decisions to close businesses or so on. It would be in a position of further advice in certain areas, particularly perhaps in relation to children, because we're seeing a very big increase in the caseload in that 5 to 11 age group and indeed among their parents. And that's not shouldn't be a surprise. You know, we have a heavily vaccinated population now, so the virus is looking for people who aren't vaccinated. And that means adults who haven't had their vaccination yet and also children who aren't vaccinated. And certainly for adults that aren't vaccinated yet, you know, I would strongly encourage them to still do so. The vaccines are still available. About half the people in hospital and half the people in ICU are unvaccinated, many from other parts of the world, from Eastern Europe in particular, and we're making a particular effort to get information out to people in different languages and to encourage them to come forward, pop up vaccination clinics in areas where there are large migrant populations and so on. And, you know, we can still get people, more people vaccinated, and also would really encourage people, if they're asked to come for their third dose, to please come forward and get it. There's really good evidence now in Ireland and from around the world that third dose makes a difference. I tend to call it a third dose rather than a booster, because a booster implies that this is something discretionary that kind of gives you a boost. I think it's becoming increasingly clear that this may be a three dose vaccine, and that's not unusual. Hepatitis B, HPV, a lot of the childhood vaccines, you need three doses to be fully protected. And I think there's emerging evidence that that's going to be the case. That's not just my view. ECDC said the other day that everyone over 40 should have a third dose. FDA in the United States, CDC, are saying something similar, that everyone will need a third dose.
The French regulatory authority said this morning that everyone over 18 should have a third dose.
Greece.
So why are we not saying that now?
Well, we're waiting for advice from the NIAC on that.
I just saw at the weekend that there was many reports that said that there's incredible frustration within government at the pace that NIAC is operating at.
Sometimes, you know, I think we would have all preferred if the decisions made on starting the third dose program had been made earlier, because then we'd be ahead of where we are now. We've about 700,000 people have had a third dose. We'll have over a million in a week or two. But, you know, perhaps we could have started that earlier. But I don't want to be critical of them at the same time. Like, I understand where they're coming from. They have to make the decisions based on the scientific evidence available.
But any delay in that decision has very serious consequences, both for the economy and people's health.
Yeah, that's right. But they also have to be the right decisions. And, you know, bear in mind, who ends up in court in a few years' time having to defend these decisions, having to explain why they made the decisions they did and gave the advice they did. And, you know, there are people who are on the NIAC who would have been in court around the pandemic's vaccine. So I can understand where they're coming from in terms of wanting to be able to stand over the decisions. You know, the same people who will be putting pressure on them to make a decision quicker won't be there to defend them when if decisions appear to be incorrect. So
the delays are due to fears of legal action down the line.
No, I think delays are due diligence. It's the NIAC saying that if we're going to give this advice to government, we need to be able to stand over it, not just now when we're in an emergency and we're under pressure to make decisions, but also down the line. And I understand that. And that's why I've a lot of confidence, I have to say, in Professor Butler and the NIAC. But in some ways, though, that's a moot point now, because what they have approved is a third dose for about 2.5 million people. And even at the height of the vaccine program, we were able to vaccinate 250,000 people a week. So we've a lot to get on with before we need to vaccinate, for example, the over 40s. But I think that will happen. And another group, obviously, that we've asked them to give particular consideration to is those who got the single dose Janssen vaccine.
Yeah, do you have particular sympathy for those people?
I
because
do,
they
yeah.
are, they're well, really I, in a situation where immunity is waning.
I've more than sympathy. I have profound concern for them because particularly those who aren't in the younger age group, because there's very strong evidence now that immunity from that particular vaccine, not a surprise, a single dose vaccine, falls to as low as 20% in a few months. So
I think it's 13.8. That's what the Americans found anyway.
Yeah, that's one study. Yeah. But if you take the studies in the round, after a few months, immunity wanes very quickly. And I'd be worried for them. And I hope we'll get a positive decision on giving them an mRNA dose quite soon.
On the PCR tests and the demands on that system, does that have anything to do with cases plateauing, the fact that people just can't get tested?
Oh, no, I think it's due to the fact that a huge number of people at the moment have respiratory symptoms. So, you know, 85% of people going for a COVID test at the moment are getting a negative test, but they're going because they have symptoms. And it is the winter. People are out and about. Huge numbers of people have flu-like respiratory type symptoms. They're doing the right thing. They're going for a test. But, you know, you get to a point where there's only so many people who you can test.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who have COVID, we've got to extrapolate, who can't get a test.
There's a problem in a lot of counties at the moment with testing, but we're up to around 30,000 tests a day. You know, it's a pretty huge number of tests to be done in any one day. I get the point you're making, but that's why we look at the positivity as well as the number of cases, because the positivity rate should, you know, the percentage is always 100, if you get me. So,
yeah, but,
you know,
I understand that point. However, there will be people who have COVID who haven't had that infection confirmed, who may be living their life as you and I are today and spreading COVID as a result.
Well, that's why, you know, the advice, and this has been the advice from day one in this pandemic and has never changed. I know some advice has, this hasn't, is that if people do have respiratory symptoms, if they have a temperature, a cough, change in taste or smell, that you need to isolate. You need to stay at home, try to avoid being in contact with other people in your household, and do so at least until you get that test. And you might have to wait a few days for the test.
And are you happy that the HSE is doing enough to expand testing capacity?
I think when it comes to testing, the HSE has done a phenomenal job. You know, we're up around 30,000 tests a day, nearly a million tests carried out just in the last couple of weeks. They've done a phenomenal job, but it reaches a point when you've so many people who have flu-like symptoms or COVID-like symptoms, you just can't test everyone. And we've seen on two or three occasions in the course of this pandemic where we had to change the guidelines as to who goes for a test. And, you know, that's something that has to be considered.
We're being asked, given our conversation about the one-shot vaccine, is the advice likely to be very soon that people who've had that one shot should change their behaviour? So should they look at restricting themselves in terms of their interactions with people, completely avoiding going into the workplace, for example?
No, I wouldn't go that far. And bear in mind, the majority of people who've had the single dose vaccine would be in the younger age group. So they'd be less vulnerable to the virus than others. But I think all of us now over the next couple of weeks and the next couple of months need to bear in mind the fact that immunity from the vaccine wanes. So a lot of us, perhaps you and me, are probably 5-6 months after our second dose at this stage. So I think everyone now needs to be aware of this fact, that immunity from the vaccines wanes. And that means, you know, we're not as well protected as maybe we hoped we would be a few months ago when the vaccines were fresh in our system, if you like. And that's around all the advice that people know, particularly isolating and staying at home if we have symptoms, using a face covering, ideally a face mask, an FFP2 mask, a medical grade mask is much better than a cloth mask. I think that's something as well we're going to need to emphasise to people.
Okay, that they need to upgrade their masks.
It's better, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously a face covering or a cloth mask is better than no mask at all. But an FFP2 mask like the one I have here is much better than that. And we'd be encouraging people to use surgical masks or FFP2 masks. Then there's advice around ventilation, of course, hand washing. But above all, the most important one is that if you do have symptoms, you need to stay at home, try to avoid other people in your household, and get that PCR test and wait for it. And I know a lot of debate about antigen tests, but there's no debate about the fact that if you're symptomatic, it's a PCR test, you need not an antigen test.
Mm-hmm. But what about the use of antigen tests overall? There's so much confusion around this now. Where do you stand on it?
I'm in favour of them. I have some back home. I use them before, you know, maybe going out to meet people for dinner or going to meet my parents. Antigen tests are now being used extensively. We're sending them out to close contacts in the post. They're have been used in colleges now for ages and workplaces. In meat plants, they've been very successful in keeping a lid on outbreaks there. The concern that we have is around self-testing. And I know the CMO and others have been criticised for expressing their concerns on this, but their concerns are legitimate. You know, we have evidence that shows that people, when they're self-testing, are not using it appropriately, are using the test when they're symptomatic. And that's not it at all. So if you're symptomatic, it's PCR. Where you use an antigen test is when you're fully vaccinated, you've no symptoms, and you want an additional reassurance that it's okay for you to go to that concert or go out for dinner with those friends or visit your parents.
I don't know. I have them as well, and I see the negative coming up. I'm asking myself now, do I trust this? How much can I trust the negative result?
It's depending on who you listen to, it's around 80%. So there will be false positives.
Well, Ronan Glynn told us yesterday, if you get a positive antigen test, it's 80% is the possibility that you have COVID. It's not foolproof on that side either.
No, that's right. So we have people who have a positive antigen test and then they come for the PCR.
And they don't have COVID.
And in one in five times, the PCR is negative. Yeah, so they're, these are tests that are not as sensitive or specific as a PCR test. There will be false negatives and false positives. We're less worried about the false positives because if somebody gets a false positive, they will
go for the PCR
isolate
test
and so on until they get the PCR test. The concern is around the false negatives because people might then think that this means they don't have COVID. And that's why we're being very clear with people is that this is a test that you use when you've no symptoms, when you're fully vaccinated. It's kind of a belt and braces, triple layer of protection. It's not something you use.
Yeah, a belt and braces with a question mark because, you do that before you go to a gig, but you may still have COVID.
If you're not fully vaccinated and if you've any symptoms, you shouldn't go to a gig, full stop. Okay. And then only if you're fully vaccinated and you're asymptomatic, should you then consider an antigen test to give you that additional assurance.
Given that you use them, you know how much they cost. How much should they cost?
I'd like them to cost a lot less. But my set there in the pharmacy in Dolphins Barn there the other day for about €7.50 or €8, which is expensive. So, I'd like them to be in around €2 or €3 a test.
Okay.
And we're working on
everywhere.
That
and what's the delay?
We want to make sure that they are €2 or €3 a test. So I think the initial proposal was just to subsidise them in the pharmacies, but they're actually very expensive in the pharmacies. So bringing them down from €7 or €8 to maybe €4, which is what you can get them for in the supermarket anyway, wouldn't be a good idea. We'd be spending hundreds of millions of public money just bringing down the cost of them in the pharmacies when you could actually get them in the supermarkets for €4 anyway. So we want to do something with the pharmacies and the bigger retailers that actually is meaningful for people and brings the cost down to, we'll say, €2 or €3.
Mm-hmm. So they would be available everywhere, including the supermarkets at that price, €2 or €3.
Well, the most important thing is that they are widely available at €2 or €3. And there's no point in subsidising them just to bring them down to what you can buy them for in Aldi and Lidl anyway.
Okay.
So we want to make sure that they're subsidised so that they're actually cheaper for people.
So that's what's causing the delay, not the fact that the CMO has concerns around subsidising them. Are you past that now in that the decision has been made to subsidise the tests?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, the CMO's concern is that if we subsidise them, people will use them inappropriately. The government has received that advice, but we're not accepting that advice. We have a different view. Antigen tests are an additional tool. If somebody doesn't know how to use a tool, do you take it off them or do you show them how to use it correctly? And we think the right thing to do is to show people how to use it correctly. And we've absolute confidence in the Irish people to understand that. And I think that message probably is getting through now because it is being emphasised so many times that if you're going to self-test, this is something you don't do if you have symptoms.
And when do you expect the subsidy to be agreed and in place?
Hopefully by Tuesday. So Cabinet meets again on Tuesday and could sign off on that. It's considerable expenditure, so Cabinet would have to sign off on it. But if we can sort it out before then, we can do it by an incorporeal. So that's okay. A possibility.
And there will be, I would imagine, an information campaign that goes with that subsidy so that, as you say, people know what they're doing.
Yeah, and there is already, actually. You know, there's HC has done videos and...
Nobody watches them.
I know, but we will step that up, absolutely.
Now, Ronan Glynn said yesterday, we've never said that schools are safe. And the Irish Independent put together a list of 10 examples of when public health officials and government have said exactly that. And you're mentioned in that piece because you said earlier in the month, the advice we're getting from NPHET and from the CMO is that schools are a safe place. Has that message changed now?
No. There's no place that's 100% safe in a pandemic other than staying in your room and having no contact with anyone ever. But as far as places go, schools are safe. This is a controlled environment. They're as safe as children being in somebody else's house. They're probably safer than kids being involved in things like sports or drama or other after-school activities. So they are safe, but there's nowhere in a pandemic.
I don't know why you would think, why anybody would think they're safer than going to a drama class or a sport, particularly outdoor sport. Like, what is it about schools that we've always said they're safe, particularly when we see the levels of infection at the moment in that age group?
Well, I think one thing that has changed is that the virus is now prevalent in our community, and we have a very heavily vaccinated population. So naturally, the virus is looking for people who are not vaccinated. And because we are now so heavily vaccinated, people who are not vaccinated, and that includes children between 5 and 11, are more at risk than they would have been before. Mm. So that is a change.
Are there concerns now being expressed because we've seen 10,000 positive cases in school children, primary school children, in the last 2 weeks? Are you concerned about how sustainable that is for schools?
You know, children need their education. And I think it's really important that we do all that we can to keep schools open. And, you know, the teachers and the education partners and school boards have done a phenomenal job, I believe, in keeping our schools safe. But one thing we'd expect a decision from soon from the EMA is allowing us to offer vaccines to children in that age group. And that's an important thing to do once we get the go-ahead for that, and that'll help a lot. And NPHET and HICWA and others are looking to see if there are additional actions that we could take to make schools even safer still. Like, for example, young children being asked, or primary school children being asked to wear masks, which is something we haven't wanted to do up until now because it's very hard to ask young kids to do that, but it might be in their interest.
That is on the table because the Irish Times reports this morning that NPHET is considering that.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's viable to ask a six-year-old to wear a mask all day in school?
I think it'd be very difficult, and that's why we've kind of shied away from it up until now. But, you know, even if they were wearing the masks some of the time, at least that would be additional protection.
Okay, what about business supports then? If there are further restrictions that could impact hospitality, for example, and the entertainment business, do you feel that they should get further supports?
At the moment, we are pressing ahead with what we announced in the budget in relation to the rates waiver, and, you know, commercial rates are waived for that sector for this quarter. The 9% VAT rate stays in place, and we have the employment wage subsidy scheme and the pandemic unemployment payment. So as things stand, we're not departing from what was announced in the budget, which is the phase out, if you like, of the employment wage subsidy scheme. But bear in mind the way that works, that's based on your turnover. So if your turnover is down 30% or more, you qualify. So there are businesses that probably thought they were going to have a good Christmas. Now they're not because people are cancelling things. They will start to qualify for that wage subsidy scheme. Mm-hmm. But there's one thing that, you know, I will bear in mind, and was very much came up at the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting last night, is that even though we mightn't have to close down businesses, in some ways people are imposing their own sort of lockdown in a way by cancelling events and cancelling parties. And while this isn't going to affect sectors like retail so much or construction, that hospitality entertainment sector is extremely vulnerable. And, you know, we're going to keep that under review over the next couple of weeks. And if we need to bring in additional financial support for those businesses, we will.
Including reopening the PUP if you have to for those people?
I think that would only arise if we saw large numbers of people being laid off. That hasn't happened yet. And there are lots of vacancies, as you know, in the retail sector, hospitality sector and so on. But if we got to the point where we saw large numbers of people being laid off again, I think we'd have to intervene at that point. You know, bear in mind, some people working in those sectors, it could be the second or third time they're laid off. and to suddenly turn around to them and say, you know, you've been laid off now for a second or third time, but this time we're not going to help you. I don't think that would be reasonable. But at the moment, we're not seeing that. We're seeing the numbers on the PUP continuing to fall, and we're seeing large numbers of vacancies in those sectors. You know, mm-hmm. the work mightn't be available after midnight, but it is available during the day.
Yeah. What about Christmas parties? Have you decided yourself that that's off the table for you?
Well, we're not, for the second year in a row, we'll not be having the Fine Gael Christmas party, unfortunately. With so many people working from home, it would just seem a bit strange to kind of call them all together for a social occasion. So we're not doing that. I'd still hope to be in a position to, you know, take my staff out for dinner or do something like that. But I'm going to judge that near the day.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think many people are grappling with those types of decisions right now. You know, and as you say, the cancellations are coming through. You're saying you would do that with a small group of people?
As of now, yeah. So the big kind of Christmas party we would have had before the pandemic, that's not happening. You know, small groups, mm-hmm. 6, 10, you know. I would still be in the position where I would like to do that anyway for my own staff, but we will judge that near the time. And we might be in a situation coming into Christmas where we're seeing cases fall and we're seeing the numbers in hospitals starting
change.
To fall.
Are we getting?
But I know that's really annoying for people, because the one thing people always ask is for certainty and clarity, and it's the hardest thing to actually give people, because this is a dynamic and changing situation.
Are we getting this bank holiday next year or not? The extra one?
Well, as you know, that falls under my responsibility as Minister for Enterprise, but ultimately that decision will be made by government. We want to do an additional bank holiday next year as a day of recognition and a day of remembrance, to remember those who've died in the pandemic and those who grieve for them, to recognise all those workers and volunteers who did so much. And we'd also like to have a new permanent bank holiday, because we think we have too few in Ireland relative to other countries. But just in the last week or so, we kind of feel that announcing a public holiday, you know, for the 31st of January, which would be St. Bridget's Day, or the 5th of February, that would be inappropriate, given where we are. Just where we are in the pandemic, with a pandemic that's not under control. We also need to give people a bit of notice so they can work out their shifts and so on. And also bear in mind, public holidays are quite disruptive for our health service, because, you know, the GP surgeries are closed, hospitals operate on a skeleton staff.
So is it too late now to announce a bank holiday for the 31st of January or the 5th of February? Is that moment passed?
Yeah, I believe it has, because, you know, we need to give people a bit of notice. And we also want to make sure that we're not having an additional public holiday when our hospitals are still in I wouldn't say crisis, but in a very difficult situation.
So if it happens next year, it's going to be when? Late spring, summer at the earliest?
Yeah, so I've indicated this before. One option that we're looking at is the 18th of March. So you'd have a double bank holiday, which would be the 17th and 18th of March for St. Patrick's Day, 2 years since the pandemic began in many ways, at least in Ireland. And then what we would do after that from 2023 onwards would be a permanent new bank holiday for St. Bridget's Day or in bulk, if you prefer. But that decision isn't made yet. But we just thought it would be inappropriate to announce tomorrow that we're having another public holiday.
Okay, so
in the middle of difficult periods.
So the 2022 holiday may be in March, and then from there on you'd possibly move it back, if you get agreement, to the 31st of January or the 5th of February.
Well, it would be depending on what day St. Bridget's Day falls. So yeah, it would be you know, the closest Monday or Friday, if you like, to St. Bridget's
Day. Okay, but the permanent bank holiday will be based around St. Bridget's Day.
Yeah, that's the idea. Okay. There's a big gap between New Year's and St. Patrick's Day. There's obviously the argument that we should have at least one bank holiday that recalls a woman, given we have a number that recall men. And also it's the Celtic New Year. It's in bulk. So
not around the late, preference. Late toy show, as was suggested yesterday.
No, I don't think so.
All right. Tánaiste, thank you very much for coming in.
It's
Leo Varadkar. Let's take a break.